Welcome to the Meanikheim Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts strongly prefers drafting players from Pitt because he likes Pitts. I don't even know if there are any. Oh, no, I know one. Bud Means, the receiver. Maybe the best name in the entire NFL draft outside of Kool-Aid McKinstry is from Pitt. I am joined today by someone who is not from Pitt and has never been on this podcast, which makes today a momentous occasion on the week of the NFL draft. Matt Miller, welcome to the show.
I have been listening for so long. I'm a huge Lenny fan, obviously a fan of you as well, Mina. So it is an honor to join you. I'm very privileged to be here.
Oh, I appreciate it. Well, it's a perfect week to have you on for the obvious reason, the NFL draft. But because the thing I want to do today is really just address the first round of the draft. We'll get into maybe things that might happen later as well. But I've been doing player rankings. We've been doing breakdowns of the quarterbacks, the defensive players, the skill players. We've been doing tons of mock drafts. But those mock drafts, Matt, have been about what we would do, what my guests would do. And now we're entering the realm of what actually will happen. And that's kind of what I want to spend today talking to you about, is the biggest questions of round one. And I sent you a few. I think these are the ones that will sort of largely occupy us over the next 3 or 4 days or so. Some of them we might have a stronger idea about than others, but I'm pretty excited because as I was writing these and sending them to you, it occurred to me there's just a lot of chaos in the first round and a lot of uncertainty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And as someone who makes mock drafts as a profession, that's really terrifying that there is so much uncertainty this year, but it's going to make for great TV, which is the other part of our job. And that's the really fun part, is that there is, you know, I think even last year, you know, we knew so much at the top, like kind of knew like what was going to happen. It was somewhat predictable, even like Houston trading back up. You heard buzz about that, hey, they really like Will Anderson. They would like to find a way to walk out of there with both players. And you kind of dismissed it as like, yeah, okay, sure. And then it happens and you can step back like, oh, wow, that actually worked. And I think this year there's much more uncertainty. Again, like we know Washington will take a quarterback, but which quarterback, and the whole Topgolf gate that's going on right now. And it's just there. So there really is, you know, even for those of us who pretend like we know what's going to happen, there's legitimate interest as far as what's going to happen.
Well, you alluded to my first question, and I think the first big question, because there is no mystery about what will happen at pick one. The Chicago Bears are taking, unless it's the greatest smoke streak screen in the history of
all time. Yeah,
that would be actually incredible, but it's not going to happen. They're going to take Caleb Williams. So much so that we on NFL Live, we didn't talk about Top Golf Gate, but we did talk a little about the Commanders. And I think it was Schefter who said that the Bears did not do a group date. They had Caleb Williams in for a dinner with like DJ Moore, Cole Kmet.
Yeah.
They're already like, they're so far in on Williams that they're already introducing him to everybody and talking about him integrating him into the team. So we are not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about pick two. Speaking of Adam Schefter, he has been, I would say it's what's something stronger than hinting,
suggesting.
Pointing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Suggesting, alluding, very, very aggressively pointing to the likelihood that the Commanders take Jaden Daniels at pick two. It's really been a couple of weeks now. I feel like for a long time there was a debate over, you know, Drake May or Jaden Daniels, who's better. And it felt like it was going to go down to the wire, but Adam has been pretty strong on Daniels at two, despite Top Golf Gate today. For those who don't know, I talked about this on the podcast last week, the group date, Jaden Daniels' agent threw a little bit of kindling onto what seemed like a non-story when, I don't know if it was his agent or one of his agents tweeted like a skeptical emoji about the group date and whatever. I don't think that he did him any favors there, but let's start there. Like, do you think it's possible that May is still in contention for two? Are you hearing anything to that end?
Yeah, I think it's still possible. I've told this story a couple of times. You know, the 2018 NFL draft, there was all this buzz for months that Sam Darnold would be the first overall pick. I was in New York. I was working for Bleacher Report at the time. We went out for a group dinner the night before the draft, Wednesday night. I'm sitting in a steakhouse in like Midtown Manhattan and my phone rings. I run outside to answer it. Somebody who worked for the New York Jets, they had the number 3 overall pick. And he said, Baker is going first. And I was like, what? Like, really? And I know for people now, they're like, oh, of course. Like, but 24 hours before the draft that year, no one really had that. And I didn't like run to break the news. That wasn't my job at the time. But it's so much information changes right up into the draft. And I think Bill Belichick even said this on Pat McAfee, of like 24 hours before the draft, things really start to get solid. So if Adam's hearing it, I trust Adam like with my life. Like if he told me something about me, I would believe it. You know, he knows everything. So if he says it, I tend to go that way. I will say this, like Adam Peters comes from the San Francisco 49ers organization. Yeah. When he and John Lynch got there, their big thing was no leaks. Like they were trying to lock down the Trent Baalke era of them telling, you know, people like me everything that they were doing. And so, you know, that is a big part of what they're trying to do. So again, if Adam has heard it, I believe it. I have not heard one way or the other. I think you can connect a lot of dots to what they have on their roster with Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson. You can look at Jaden Daniels and say, gosh, that would be a really, really nice fit with how proficient he is as a deep ball thrower. They have some offensive line issues. You can look at what he does as a runner, and that just tends to make sense. But I would be lying if I said that anyone connected to the Commanders who knows what they're doing has told me what they're doing.
I like the idea of Adam Schefter telling you, like, Matt, this is your birthday now. And you're like, I guess it's my birthday now, right. You know? Or
be like, your son stayed up past bedtime last night.
I'd yeah,
like, you're like, oh, he yeah. probably did. You know, he was probably
I'm believing Adam Schefter. It's like when you're I've had the experience where I'm at a game, not just football, any sport, and like, I'll see something at Twitter. I'll be like, whoa. And I'm like, wait, no, I'm ahead of them. This is stupid. Right. yeah. Who do you believe, your eyes or... okay. So yeah, I'm with you there. I think what's been a little bit tricky about reading the tea leaves is, you alluded to it. Adam Peters is the GM now. He comes from San Francisco. But I don't think that tells us that much about like what traits they necessarily value right. in a quarterback, because, you know, San Francisco, obviously he was part of the regime that traded up for Trey Lance, and you could point to that and say, oh, maybe he's worried about overvaluing traits and untapped potential versus proof. But I don't know, man, it's a different team. It's a different situation. They're very different players. And it's going to be a very different offense, right? Cliff Kingsbury is their offensive coordinator, not one of the Shanahan tree guys. So that's different. I'm not saying that it necessarily means we're going to see Air Raid 2.0, but it's easy for me to imagine everyone there being excited about Daniels and his fit with the players that they have. We talked a little bit on NFL Live today about what that offense might look like. And Dan and I were both in agreement. We're like, well, it's about the quarterback. It's not about Cliff Kingsbury. Like you don't say, yeah. Well, we'd like him because he's a really good fit for Cliff Kingsbury's wildly successful NFL offense. But there are things that Cliff did that I think make sense for Daniels, which is, you know, you're putting him in the gun. You're asking him to yeah. air it out. I think this is the point I made on live today. The offense needs to evolve. If you're not implementing a very robust quarterback run game, you're doing him a disservice. I would point to Philadelphia in 2022 as having a lot of as sort of a model, I think, for what you want to do with Daniels, which is more of that power spread attack where you remember they had so much success that year with Shane Steichen, where you get the numbers advantage because of Jalen, you get one-on-ones, you throw it outside. As you said, he's very good at that. They have good playmakers. Yep. So I think there's a path for Cliff and Jaden to work well together, but Cliff needs to get better at play sequencing, evolving his offense, and tailoring it to the skills of the quarterback.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's like any skepticism I had when they made that hire, because there was so much excitement and there people were like, oh my God, they're going to get Caleb Williams. And thankfully that has all died down. But yeah. My skepticism was, you know, like, the sarcasm there of his wildly successful NFL offense is so spot on, because it has mm-hmm. been like more hype than substance. Like, you know, if the guy didn't have like the most gorgeous house of all time, you know, in Scottsdale and was super cool, like, well, how would we talk about his offense? You know, if he didn't look and dress the way he did, what would the reputation be? So
pretty privileged.
Yeah, I'm with, yeah, right. Wouldn't that be great? I'm trying to get on that level. I do think that, you know, it is a a fair, like when you look at all these teams, and this is like the great thing we get to do after the draft is like, okay, now we know who you took. Let's think about how this fit works now and think about how, what the players they have, especially for these young quarterbacks, you know, which is why I've been so bullish on New England. Like whomever they draft, I feel so badly for, because it is such a bad setup because of the roster, not because of the coaches so much, just because like the lack of talent they have. So if it's Jaden in Washington, I think there's a really clean pathway to success if we see Cliff evolve. And one last thing on that, when we were at the Senior Bowl, I had someone ask me, if you were a defensive coordinator or a defensive minded head coach, which quarterback would you least like to play against? And my answer was Jaden Daniels. And I look at Dan Quinn, and I know he has to be asking himself that question of all these dudes that I could potentially draft, who's the one that's going to give me the most problems as a defensive-minded head coach? And I think that answers pretty easily, Jaden Daniels, with Caleb Williams being off the board.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about Jaden this week, obviously, on TV. And when I was going back through his plays to find clips for NFL Live this week, the thing that I was so distracted by, and I ended up, I think we're going to do a segment on this, is when you watch him, how much the gravity of his running ability affects defenses, the way linebackers are almost pulled on a string by him, and then the massive zone voids that creates for Malik Nabers to run through.
I was going to say, for Malik Nabers to just go scoot, and
they help each other. Yeah. You know, I think because a ding on Daniels is, okay, well, he played with like an all-star team at LSU to some extent. And I think that's true and it's fair. And it's something that I think you have to account for when you compare him and Drake May. But I do think how his presence also really helped his skill players, and you see that on tape. And I agree with you that I think that could be alluring, especially for a defensive minded head coach and Dan Quinn. We'll see, you know, or not. It's not set in stone. It seems likely. And if that does happen, I think that then leads us to our next question, which is probably the more uncertain question, I think. And this is the one that's really, I would say, going to most dramatically impact the first round, which is who trades up for a quarterback. So I'm looping both May and McCarthy into this scenario, although we'll talk about the other quarterbacks later. But it is, of course, possible that someone trades up to get Drake May at pick 3. So that would be the first inflection point, whether the Patriots actually trade down. I'm assuming May goes before McCarthy. You can tell me if
I think that's right. Yeah.
I would be shocked if, I know there's some buzz around McCarthy rising. So that to me would be wild, honestly, based on my assessment. So that's the first inflection point. And do the Patriots actually trade down? And then the second one is who comes up and gets McCarthy. It feels like 11 with Minnesota would be the floor for him. So the question, Matt, is whether Minnesota trades up, whether they leapfrog the Giants, whether the Giants trade up, whether the Broncos, the Raiders, anyone else trades up. This to me is the question of the first round of the NFL draft.
Yeah. And like, so I'm sitting here trying to do my final mock draft, which will run like Wednesday afternoon. And this is the hard part, is this right here is, okay, if New England trades out at 3, let's say the Vikings come all the way up to 3 and they take Drake May, who like has all those connections to Josh McCown, and like it would be a really good fit, right? So they take Drake May. Well, then who the hell is the quarterback for the Patriots? Like, what do they trade back up? Like, do they try to, do they come up to 5 to get in front of the New York Giants? And I've been told the Giants don't expect to draft a quarterback in the first round. Like, they might be a team that would in the second round, but not necessarily the first. Because like they think they're all going to be gone by 6. And you mentioned the Broncos, like they don't have a second round pick. But and I mean, unless you're a huge Zach Wilson fan, you really don't feel like they have a quarterback there. And I wouldn't think that, I know you have a lot of smart listeners, I wouldn't think there are any people out there who are like, man, this is Zach Wilson's redemption tour. So there are so many of those, as you said, like inflection points or dominoes that have to fall. I feel like New England is that first one, you know, like, it does really truly start with 2, because I think what Washington does informs what New England then does. And if they're willing to move out or stay, I think they would stay for Jaden Daniels. I think the idea of getting out would be like, if you had the same grade on Drake May and JJ McCarthy, and you feel like you could slide back a little bit and still get one of them, like that's great for team building, because you can get some extra draft capital, which they so badly need to refill this roster. But it's all like this weird guessing game of, if New England slides and Minnesota comes up, then, you know, do you jump back in front of the Giants? I feel like you almost have to at that point.
I think the yeah, right. That's the question, though, right? If I think the most likely outcome is New England sticks at three. So let's say they stick at three and they take Drake May. So this is now the JJ McCarthy watch begins. I think the question here is, does Minnesota have to jump the Giants? Because the Giants will take him if he would they take him if he falls to six? Because if they won't, then who's Minnesota competing with between four through 10, because they're at 11?
Yeah.
And like, so it's almost like a game of chicken with all the other teams. Like, how much do you actually have to give to go up and get JJ McCarthy if the Giants aren't actually going to take him at six?
Yeah. And so, like, if you are the Vikings front office, that is your mission right now. It's like you're calling everyone you know in every favor ever and saying, do you think the Giants will take JJ McCarthy if he's there? Because you're right. If not, you're just kind of guarding your flank. You're making sure no one jumps you at 11 is really all you're trying to do, which, you know, you could probably put the word out of, hey, we'll match any offer. You know, if somebody's trying to come up, you know, if you could call the Falcons at eight, basically, and say, we'll match anything. If someone tries to jump us, you know, if Denver tries to move up, we'll match it or we'll best it to give you this pick. So that is that, like, that's the, I think, the underside of the draft that is so fascinating. And it's like most of the phone calls I get this week are teams asking me that, like, where do you think this player will get drafted? Or agents asking me, like, where do you think this player will get drafted, so that they can set expectations basically with their clients. But it is a lot of teams who are saying, you know, like, where do you think Malik Nabers goes? It's like, well, I think he'll go here or here, basically. And everyone's trying to piece together this map of where these prospects are going to go. And a lot of it is for that trade up material, you know, of if you're Minnesota at 11 and you feel like the Giants are out of it, you might not have to give up that extra first round pick that you have. I think to move from 12 to six last year, the Cardinals gave up a 2 and a 5 and got back a 3. So it was like 12, a 2, a 5, and they got 6 and a third. So, yeah, like, we'll do that all day. Yeah. Yeah. And you get still pick 23 to get, you know, whatever else you need, a corner or a defensive tackle. So I do think, like, as we go through the draft, it's going to be so fascinating with each pick to see the ramifications that they have, because it changes so much every 10 minutes.
Let's move outside of the realm of what might happen, which is, like, kind of what we're talking about, and just actually talk about what we would do. Because I do think a lot of this, the more I think about it, it's weird. The Giants are kind of like the sleeping giant, no pun intended, of this draft. Because how they view McCarthy, I think, really affects, as we've been discussing, so much before them and after them. But I haven't gotten any indication. I mean, you really haven't been that many little breadcrumbs about it. So not about what they should do. Matt, if you were Joe Shane and you're at six and nobody's moved up for McCarthy and you're choosing between him and Malik Nabers, let's say, you know, the Cardinals take Marvin Harris Jr., then the Chargers take Joe Alt, for example, or whatever. Yeah, that would be the most likely to get you to this situation. Would you take McCarthy or Nabers?
Oh, my gosh. I would take JJ. I really would. And I love Malik Nabers. He's like, he's my number four overall player. But I am such a non-believer in Daniel Jones. And this goes back to, I had a third round grade on Daniel Jones coming out. Like, I was not a fan, and I've never seen anything to make me go back and say, oh man, I was wrong. Let me reevaluate this. Like, I just didn't see it then. I don't see it now. And now he's got like a neck injury on top of it and a knee injury on top of it. So I would take JJ. I know the tape is limited. I don't think that's necessarily his fault. And I look at how great he was under pressure. And something that I feel like gets lost a lot is, you know, it's not his fault he played on a great team and how many times they had double digit leads in the second halves of games. And, you know, he didn't even play in like 7 fourth quarters because they were blowing everyone out. But there were so many times where we wouldn't see him throw the ball for like 10 or 12 plays in a row, sometimes longer. But then it would be 3rd and 6. And they would be like, hey, JJ, we need you to make this throw. And he would do it consistently. So I kind of fell in love with that part of his game of, sure, like, you don't get to see it a ton and you have to watch a bunch of games to see, you know, a big group of NFL's type throws. But his, like, composure in those moments really won me over. So I think it's going to be a process for him. But I'm such a big believer in the person and the poise and the type of competitor that he is that I would feel comfortable taking him and saying, like, this is going to be our guy, especially in that situation.
I like him as a prospect more than I liked Jones back in 2019, right? It was. And I think the biggest point of differentiation for me is how he manages a collapsing pocket, which there will be a fair amount of those in New York.
Yep.
He just has a better feel for pressure than, I mean, this has kind of been a ding on Jones for a long time, is, you know, a guy's bearing down on him and it's almost like he has like a blinder on. He just doesn't see it. And I think McCarthy, you get an upgrade there. You're also apprehensive about starting Jones this season or playing him because of the injury guarantee. You can cut him loose next year, but he's got big injury guarantee. And I know New York doesn't want to trigger that. I think my concern, and I don't think there's any good answer. I do think the adjustment will be really rough going from that Michigan offense where they were just dominating to playing. I mean, if they take him at six, there's no wide receiver one. I mean, you can get maybe his teammate, Roman Wilson, in the second round. There's a lot of really talented players, but it's still a pretty inferior skill group compared, certainly on a relative basis and to the rest of the league. But you just don't know if you're going to be in position again to take a quarterback. So I think I might do it as well. I don't know. I guess I'm having it high a little bit because, it's like Neighbors is so obviously what they need, but you need a quarterback as well. So,
and it's tough because, not to get so far ahead, but like next year's group of quarterbacks doesn't look very good as of right now. And I know that'll change and there'll be some guy, like, we'll all fall in love with Carson Beck over the next year or something. But right now there's not that, you know, there's not that alpha guy that you're saying like, hey, maybe we tank for this player, or maybe we roll out a Drew Lock for a season so that we can get this guy next year. So it's almost like, I like right now I would take JJ McCarthy over the field for next year. Like, I just, and I'm, wow, I have him at 19. I'm not the biggest JJ McCarthy fan on the planet, but I think he's a better player and his future is brighter than the guys we're looking at for next year.
All right. The third question I have is also about the first. Well, we'll see, I guess. The question is, where does Roma Dunze go? So I think this is fascinating because, I mean, I've seen mocks that have Harrison Jr. and Neighbors in different orders landing in different places, but I feel you, Odunze, personally as the most interesting player in the draft, because I could see a world in which he is taken in the top six, even if teams view him that high. I could see a world in which he drops outside of the top 10, but if he is taken in the top 10, and it's not, let's say Harrison Jr. and Neighbors are off the board first, really you would either need Odunze to go at 9 or 10 to the Bears or the Jets, or the Falcons would have to trade down, which for a team that wants to leapfrog those players because they love Odunze so much.
Yeah.
I think that's a realistic possibility, Matt, but tell me, do I have Odunze colored glasses? Because I just think he's so good. And I view this top three receiving group as so good that I actually think they are all worth trading up for.
So he is my favorite player in the entire draft. And I say that as a diehard Texas Longhorn fan who had to watch him rip my heart out in the college football playoffs when absolutely no one could stop him. So I am an enormous Rome fan. He's my number three overall player. Wow. It's Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze. So if it were me, let's say Marvin Harrison Jr. goes four, and I think he will. If the Chargers stay at five and take Malik Neighbors, Rome could go to the Giants at six. Excuse me. I think he's very much in play. Let's say Joe Alt goes five to the Chargers, I think he has to be in play for the Titans at seven in that scenario. I think the Bears would be giddy with glee if he was there at nine. That's like the easiest decision ever for me. If he's there at nine, just give Caleb Williams that amazing trio of players. But I do think that Rome is good enough that we're going to see teams on the back end of the draft. If he were to start to slip in your scenario, like if you're the Buffalo Bills, call the Atlanta Falcons, please, and just be like, hey, this is everything you've ever needed in a wide receiver. He's hardworking. There's like no diva to his game at all. He's a 50-50 ball winner who can separate over the top. So I think if you're Buffalo and you know you got to do something drastic to catch Kansas City, like, why not give up a 2025 first round pick that's probably going to be in the late 20s to get to number 8 to get Rome Odunze? Yes. That's what I would do, because I think if you're in the AFC, you have to feel a little desperate to catch Kansas City. So, like, why not? Why not swing for that grand slam and go get a top 10 pick and get an elite wide receiver?
Are there any other teams? Because I've been pounding the table for Buffalo to try to get Rome. However, they're picking 28. And if I'm the Falcons, yeah, I'm like, we got to come out of this with a blue chip defensive player. We're going to talk about that in the second half of the pod, by the way. I promise defense exists. I don't know if I want to move down that far. Although if you threw in a future first, I think they would have to pretty seriously consider it. Mm-hmm. But is there another team picking ahead of Buffalo and behind the Falcons? Or I guess behind the Jets could try to jump the Bears.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah,
that's, and if I'm the Falcons, I'm like, yeah, that is, I think if you're a Falcons fan, the dream scenario is to not drop that far and to pick mm-hmm. up something. You wouldn't get a first probably, but you definitely wouldn't get a first, but you'd get something. But is there another team between the Jets and the Bills where you would, I'm not saying you're thinking they will, but where you think they should, because we're so high on Odunze, consider calling?
Man, I think the Bengals are one of those teams. Like, if I don't imagine T. Higgins is there for long. Yeah. I had this in one of our draft notebooks, I think a week ago. Like, there's been no communication between T. Higgins reps and the team since they requested that trade. So I think, like, he's going to play into the tag this year unless something happens on draft weekend to where he gets moved. But you're the Bengals. You're running that 3 wide. Tyler Boyd's gone. You know, even if, you know, the idea is we'll have Higgins for one more year, Odunze is the ideal, you know, replacement for him. He could play in the slot for 1 year. I mean, he had some production there. I wouldn't worry about that usage at all, but same thing, like, you have to chase Kansas City, and the Bengals have shown they can beat them when Joe Burrow is healthy. So I think there would be a lot of pressure. At least I would, if I were in that front office, I'd be like, guys, we got to keep this up. Like, we have something to go in here with this 3 wide that no one can defend when we're all healthy. So yeah, getting a Odunze in there, and you got 5 years of now very inexpensive wide receiver play at a high level.
Yeah. I mean, that's another reason why I think Odunze is worth it, because, you know, a wide receiver, a top 10 receiver in the NFL is going to cost more than $25 million a year. Yep. Plus, that number is not going down. If he, and I believe he has that in him to be an immediate contributor and be a top 10 wide receiver. So the ability to get that on that contract is just so, I feel this way about any of the top 3 receivers in this draft, yeah, which is remarkable. It's rich. It's great. Like, you know, we're talking about like the Bills, that would be like equivalent to what the Falcons did to go up and get Julio. Right. But it's, mm-hmm, and that is lofty, obviously. But anyways, if it does happen, if a team does trade up for Odunze, or if he were to go, it would probably only be if a team were to trade up with the Falcons, then that's the only way in which you would have the top 10 players potentially be all offense, which has never happened in the NFL draft. But the Bears might take defense at 9. We'll get to that after the break.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? 2 words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and older, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.com. West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Okay. My fourth question for you. It's about defense. Is Dallas Turner actually going to be the first defensive player taken in the draft?
I've been asked this question a lot this week by people who have like vested interest in this. If we had talked 2 days ago, Mina, I would have said, yeah, definitely. I'll go 8 to Atlanta. As we are sitting here now, I think there's a 50-50 shot. Byron Murphy from Texas is the first player off the board. So not to spoil, you know, my mock draft that comes out Wednesday. Please still read it after you listen to this podcast. But that's the way I'm leaning right now. And I think Atlanta at 8, Chicago at 9 are certainly teams that if the wide receivers are wiped out by that point, I think you could see. And with Atlanta, you don't even need the receivers wiped out because they – surely cannot take another offensive skill player in the first round this year. But I look at Raheem Morris coming from LA, where that defense ran through the 3 technique. And Grady Jarrett has been a fantastic NFL player, but finding his
claw
would be very important.
Everybody brings up Grady Jarrett when they talk about Byron Murphy.
It is. Yeah. So just get the next one. And I, again, probably a little bit of a Texas homer here, but Byron Murphy is fantastic. And I would not be shocked at all if he's the first defender off the board.
You're not a homer. Yeah. Or I mean, you might be, but I agree. He's awesome. He is such a good fit for the Bears, by the way. When you mentioned that, my mind got spinning with that 4-3 and, you know, they just don't have a player like him, a truly penetrating three tech who can push the pocket, who's got great strength the Jarrett comparison is because despite his size, he's a little undersized. He's able to use it so much to his advantage to gain leverage over offensive linemen. He's really, really, really solid against the run too. He's so athletic. He's got a decent set of pass rush moves. It makes sense for Chicago at 9. My preference would be to take Dunze if he's there, but he might not be. I think Atlanta's tricky because they really need an edge rusher.
Very badly.
But I don't think, personally, Turner is so much better than Latu and Verse that if I'm Atlanta, I would not turn down a trade down if I could get one of those players and accumulate decent draft capital. Turner's been a tough one for me, man, because like I wanted to like his tape so much more than I did. And I think the promise of him, I talked about this with Deontay Lee, is his age, the potential, the athleticism.
Yep.
And I think you can absolutely make a case for him to go as a top edge. But it's not Anderson Jr. or, you know, one of the no-brainers of the last few years, which there haven't been that many, actually, which does make
it
a little...
It's not Aiden Hutchinson, even. Like, I would take Hutch over, and maybe that's obvious because he was the number 2 overall pick, but yeah, there's not that... You don't watch his tape and you're convicted about it. It's like you see where it could be, but not necessarily... He's not there yet, basically.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. Whether he goes and Murphy Jr., a lot of it is going to follow off of our first discussion, which is what happens obviously with the quarterbacks and the receivers, because all these teams are trade down candidates. And then it becomes, okay, well, how many of these defensive guys actually go in the first round in the top 20? Because the players I just mentioned, Latu and Verse, I could see them going in the middle. I could see them falling to the 20s. I don't know where Johnny Newton is going to go. I've seen him out of the first round on a lot of mocks, which kind of blows my mind because I love the player. And then there's three corners who are definitely going first. Will it be four, five? I mean, when you try to do these mocks, how many defensive players do you typically have going in the first round?
Like 10 or 11, which is crazy that it's record. Not more than that, right? Yeah. It would, yeah, offensively, would, yeah. I think we're trending in that direction. I mean, you mentioned it. And I think with the edge position, there's such this idea of, well, we'll wait. We'll wait for, you know, Chris Braswell or Adisa Isaac or, you know, Chop Robinson, maybe even at the top of round two. Mm-hmm. With the D tackles, you mentioned Johnny Newton, you know, the foot injury kind of held him back in this pre-draft process. I still think there's a shot he goes first round, but I don't find a lot of teams who say that. Like, I think he should. The tape says he should, but you don't hear that very often. It's more like, oh, he'll go top 40, you know? And so it does feel like four corners, probably Terrion Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell. I think Cooper DeJean goes, and then maybe Nate Wiggins, maybe Kool-Aid McKinstry. So it is tough to find a fit. And sometimes I'll be doing a mock draft. Like, well, that was my eighth wide receiver coming off the board in the first round. Is that right? You know, or, hey, there's seven or eight offensive linemen going in the first round. That doesn't feel possible, but it really, truly does, because the tackles are so good and the receivers are so good. And you throw in a tight end and Brock Bowers and four or five quarterbacks, and like really quickly you're at 21 or 22 offensive players. So that is the difficult part. And with the edge guys, like, we could kind of poke holes like we did with Turner. You know, you could poke holes in Chop Robinson. He had six sacks in college. You could look at that. Or with Latu, who I love, you could talk about the injuries. And with Verse, you know, he's a little bit stiff at times and isn't a, you know, an elite tester. So there are different things where you could almost talk yourself out of those guys at times.
I'm looking at the first round right now, the teams. And what jumps out to me, Matt, is like so many of the teams that could go defense also could go for an offensive lineman.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I look at a team.
Right. Yep.
Like Tampa, I'm like, Tampa really needs an edge rusher. But if like Graham Barton is there, you know, if they're like, there's just, right. Detroit is a team, I think corner edge seem most likely. So, but they could trade out for a team that wants to jump in and grab an offensive tackle. Like, which of the teams do you think will most likely go defense? I mean, we talked about the Falcons. They're the most obvious one.
Yeah, I think Jacksonville probably has to. I think corner makes a lot of sense for Jacksonville, which that might be where the first corner comes off the board. Like, they're so hard to slot this year as well. I think the Rams are interesting at 19. You know, they've drafted really well, especially outside the first round. Obviously, they don't have first round picks ever, but I think the Rams could be like, they could be that landing spot for Latu. You know, him being local, they probably have a little more comfort with the injury history. But yeah, like after that, I'm with you. I look at, you know, Green Bay or Philadelphia as two teams from like, surely they'll go corner, right? They have to go corner, but Howie Roseman's never drafted a corner in the first round. So it's like, will they actually go corner? Even though it feels like they almost have to, but both those teams, they value the trenches so much that it's almost, you know, you're almost predicting that they'll draft away from where they really need to, just because it's so ingrained in their DNA as a front office.
Yeah. And then there's, you got a team like Minnesota that should go corner, but if they go up and get a quarterback, they won't be picking at 11 or 23.
Which the Chargers could go corner if the Chargers are the trade destination. Their corners are. I know they added Christian Fulton, but their corners were awful last year, so they could definitely go there.
Vegas is one. I think Denver and Vegas are very fascinating to me because I think those are two teams that really need blue chip defensive players. And like Denver at 12 is a team where let's say Turner goes at Atlanta, that those are two teams where I would think Jared Verse or Latu would be in strong consideration. And then Vegas, they finally have the defensive line solidified, but they still need corners. So then you're looking at Terrion Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell there, but those are quarterback teams. So it's like, if they don't take a quarterback
and tackle teams, Garrett Bowles might not be long in Denver and the Raiders need a right tackle. That's what I run into with those teams every time, because I love Jared Burse and I think he should be a top 15 pick. When I do a mock draft, I'll get to that spot and be like, wait, I don't have Jared Burse going yet. But I can't talk myself into, you know, a defensive end in that spot over a tackle, just because the premium at that position. And there is a drop off. We like this tackle class is really good, but it only good at the top. Like there is a pretty significant drop off after, like you mentioned, Graham Barton, he's going to get moved inside, you know? So after like Amarius Mims and Tyler Guyton, there is a significant drop off. So it's like, well, do you just, it feels like everyone will take the tackles early because they know we're going to be able to get better depth in the second round on the D line.
Is there a defensive player to our, what we're discussing in terms of how they, somebody's going to drop? Probably more than one really good player is going to drop just because of the way the offensive players, the strength, the way the board's shaking out. Is there a defensive player where if he drops outside of that top 20, 21 or whatever, you feel like some team is just going to get an absolute steal in him if he drops? Because we don't know, you know, but I'm just saying, if it happens.
Yeah, I think Terron Arnold would be that player. He's my top corner, but talking to teams, you don't get that a lot. You still get a lot of love for Quinyon Mitchell. There are some teams that have Nate Wiggins as the top corner. And corner always comes down to like preference and scheme fit so much. You know, we even saw that last year, you know, with the conversation around Deontay Banks and Emmanuel Forbes to some degree. But I think Arnold is like, he didn't test super well. You know, he was kind of a one-year wonder at Alabama. So I think there's a little bit of hesitation on that. I don't get it. I think the film is fantastic. He's physical. He's really aggressive. He's great at the line of scrimmage. But he would be that guy where I could see teams going for the speed of Quinyon Mitchell and Nate Wiggins over him. And, you know, we're seeing him be like the third corner off the board. And he's going to be such a stud if that happens.
I love Terron Arnold.
It's because you like Devin Witherspoon and like
he's got that dog in him. He's got that dog. Exactly. Like he has so much juice as a player. Like when he arrives, he makes receivers feel it. He can press. He's physical at the line of scrimmage. He can play man. He can play zone. I think he's got the testing number. I don't know, but I know Quinyon Mitchell is a freak athlete, but Arnold has the fluidity, I think, to be a truly good man corner in the NFL. He can play zone too. I think if Jacksonville goes Mitchell at 17, that seems like the first obvious corner spot. It would have been the Colts need a corner, but I feel like they got to go offense. We'll see.
Yep.
Then I think some team, I'm looking at the board to see where Arnold might go. I mean, I'm seeing Pittsburgh at 20, Philadelphia at 22.
If he goes to Philly, that's unfair. Like,
I mean,
which I know we say that every year with Philly, but yeah.
No doubt. Okay. Next question is something you kind of hinted at. How many receivers will be drafted in the first round? I'll just say that. So we know the top three are going. Brian Thomas Jr. It seems like a no doubt first rounder. I don't know exactly where his floor is in the draft. I mentioned Indianapolis. That seems like a pretty likely destination. It makes a lot of sense for what they need. Are there any other teams that you would see as possible Thomas Jr. destinations before we get to the other receivers?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the Colts are certainly in play there. I think you have to always, the Saints should go tackle, but I think they definitely could go wide receiver opposite Olave. The Bengals, we talked about the Bengals could. I was told, like, don't rule out the Rams, which would be kind of crazy to me. I like their wide receiver room, but, and then Pittsburgh traditionally doesn't draft wide receivers the first round, but, you know, they do need another option in there. So it's kind of like we talked about with the defensive ends where, see a lot of teams that could go receiver, but they also have another need that might jump that.
If a team really likes him, they should jump. New Orleans should really consider trading down if that's presented to them. I don't view Thomas Jr. He's not a player who I would trade up for in the same way that the top three. That's just my feeling. But I don't know if like a Buffalo, you know, thinks that they have to move to get him. He also that's not my favorite fit either. Indianapolis to me just makes too much sense. Like, not to, assuming Bowers is off the board there. Like, yeah. That's just so comparing with Pittman Jr. and Downs and Richardson, you know, can throw the ball deep. It just feels like they need someone who can stretch the field the way Thomas Jr. can. So, but that brings me to the question, which is how many guys will actually go. A.D. Mitchell is pretty widely seen as the next wide receiver, correct?
Yeah, so I think I didn't want to interrupt you there, but on the Colts, and something I keep hearing is Xavier Worthy from Texas to the Colts, because they keep saying we need speed.
Come on,
we need speed. No. And I'm telling you, like, there's a shot he's the fourth receiver off the board. So, and you know, it's come out late that Brian Thomas Jr. has a labrum injury that he's gonna need surgery after his rookie season to fix that, most likely. A.D. Mitchell, you know, there was the concerns about management of his type 1 diabetes. Those things might just be, you know, they're true, but they might be things that are being overblown a little bit. But I think Xavier Worthy's, you know, 4-2-1 and what he does in the open field. We see these guys overdrafted. I don't think he's worthy of the top 15 pick, no pun intended.
Hey.
But we see these speed guys overdrafted every year. So I'm just putting it out there. Like, don't be surprised if that happens.
Right. Yeah. I remember when Ruggs went 13, right? Was when
Henry
Ruggs went, and everybody was shocked, and that was similar. But I mean, he's just too small, man. Like, I would take him later, but I wouldn't, like, Thomas Jr. is, and A.D. Mitchell are both unbelievably fast and big. Like, the
40 pounds heavier than Xavier Worthy. Legitimately 40 pounds heavier.
I don't think that would be a good choice. But anyway, so Worthy is one. Mitchell, I can't see Mitchell. I think Buffalo has to be the floor for him at 28, correct?
I agree. Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Kansas City would not let A.D. Mitchell buy them either. So, not that I don't think he gets past Buffalo, but there's no way Kansas City would let him get past.
If you're Kansas City, would you consider picking up the phone and trying to jump Buffalo? Not will they, but would you do it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, they tried last year. They tried going up to get – you loved Zay Flowers last year, right? They tried going up to get Zay Flowers, and no one would let them do it. And I think that's the problem with Kansas City, is a lot of people are not willing to help them. I think it's almost to the point where they would have to pay a premium, because, like,
really?
Who wants to give Patrick Mahomes, you know, Brian Thomas Jr. or A.D. Mitchell? Like, no one wants to do that. And so I think that's the hard part, is you know why they're coming up, and no one wants to give him another weapon.
I really like the idea of Kansas City doing a trade with, like, Dallas trading out of the first, or trading down. That would make so many people mad. Okay, so other than A.D. Mitchell, so we both agree Thomas Jr., A.D. Mitchell, Worthy's a wild card, which that blows my mind, but okay. Are there any, because there's multiple destinations for receivers in the bottom 10. Yeah. I'm looking, Dallas, sneaky, I don't think they'll do it. We'll see what happens with Arizona, and I think a lot of it obviously, again, flows from who trades down. The Buffalo, the Lions, sleeper, I don't think they'll do it, but that's a sleeper team. The Niners, depending on, you know, the whole Ayuk of it all.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Kansas City. Are there any other receivers that you like as potential late first round? And maybe their team would trade up to get one of them.
Yeah. And Baltimore is in there, too. Like, they could definitely go wide receiver as well. I think, you know, a couple guys are on the fringe. Ladd McConkey is a great player. The injury history is a little concerning, because he's just not a big body. And he's had, you know, multiple years of injuries. Keon Coleman is probably in that fringe. Xavier Leggett from South Carolina is probably in that group. I love Ricky Pearsall from Florida. I don't get the sense that he's in that top 32 conversation so much. So I think, like, I feel great about 6 wide receivers. 7 would probably surprise me. I think we're getting to the point where teams feel like they can wait a little bit. Like, you know, if you could wait for Jalen Polk, or if you could wait for Malachi Corley, like, you're probably going to do that, as opposed to overdrafting a little bit for, like, a, you know, Xavier Leggett and Malachi Corley are really similar in my opinion, but they're the pick range on them is like 15 to 20 pick difference. So you might be better suited waiting, as opposed to being a team that jumps too early on one of those guys.
Well, team that I think would shock the world if they did not take a receiver is the Carolina Panthers at 30. Maybe they won't. I don't know. But pretty much everyone expects them to. So my question to you is, we've been talking about all the guys who go in the first round. If you're Carolina at 33, you're behind Kansas City, who's another team that people expect to take a wide receiver. Who is your dream player within the bounds of reality available to you at 33?
I think it's Leggett. And some of that is like, oh, he's local, but I think that yards after catch, like what he does as, I think for Bryce Young, like you have to help Bryce. And giving him someone who can body defensive backs that can win on slant routes. I think back to when Drew Brees had Michael Thomas, that guy who could just win on, you know, those quick hitters. He's going to be able to shield defenders from the ball and then make something happen after the catch. So I know they drafted Jonathan Mingo last year. Didn't have great returns rookie year. And I think Leggett gives you so much more burst, so much more juice after the catch. So that is ideal for me. Like realistically ideal, you know, taking away the Brian Thomas Juniors and guys like that.
Yeah, he's sort of like budget Brian Thomas Jr. in a way. But I like it too. I like his fit with Deontay Johnson, who they've got. I think that's a complementary skill set. You talk about Leggett creating after the catch. Johnson's so good at getting open. They work different parts of the field. Both are just very dramatically an improvement in terms of like the playmaking ability over what you had in the offense last year. So I do like that. I do still like the idea of Ladd on the Panthers as well, just giving Bryce an easy answer, you know, which is, again, something that was really missing last year. They're going to have some really interesting options. I'll be curious to see what they do, but of course they're going to be sitting there sweating. Maybe they're a team that would pick up the phone and trade up because they really want someone. I don't know, maybe possible.
Yeah. They're running out of draft capital at some point, you know, like at some point they have to almost stop doing that, but entirely new regime now.
One more question about the Panthers. Would you trade 33 for Higgins?
I would. Yeah, absolutely. Same with Ayuk, which I don't think the 49ers would take that. I think he's worth more than that. But yeah, I would do it just because there's a quality in like the known. And I think, you know, that's like you know exactly what you're getting. And he might never be an elite number one, but he's a hell of a lot better than what you have. And you know what you're getting. There's no miss rate as opposed to the unknown of a draft prospect that we might all really like. I don't know why more teams don't trade draft picks for players that are proven. I will never run a front office unless, like, if you're a GM someday and you want to hire me, we can try to figure this out. But that is something I would do is, like, let's trade third-round picks for proven players. You know, we see teams do that. Like, Brett Beach is big on trading seventh-round picks for players who were formerly drafted highly. You know, the idea of, like, hey, maybe we can fix what was broken hasn't really worked out, but I love the effort to do that.
I don't think he's going to get traded, but if you're Cincinnati, you got to seriously consider that if it was on the table, because like you said, he's not going to be on this, most likely not going to be on this team after 1 year. And to get 33, it's a pretty good return, honestly, especially, again, given the quality of the receivers in this draft.
And like, I guess your best case scenario is you're going to get a comp pick, which would be a late third at best. Unless you're going to try to pull off the tag and trade thing, which we did see a couple teams do this year, but I feel like that diminishes the return as well, because and even in this scenario, you're trading a guy who immediately needs to get paid. I understand that. But I think now, like, the value is not going to get any better than it is right now.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of trades, my last question is about, again, the end of the first, and I posed it this way. Is anyone going to trade back up to second end of the first round, probably the second end, the end of the first round, for Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix, or an offensive tackle? Because I was looking at the draft and it occurred to me a team might want to jump those teams at the end, like Washington, it comes to mind. But let's start with the quarterbacks. So my question assumes that they don't go in the middle of the first round. I have seen mocks having them, you know, go 12, 13. I do still don't believe it, Matt. What do you
think? I'm the same way. I hear it too, and I'm like, God, really? Like, and I tweeted this or posted this today. It's like, I feel like every year we're kind of fed an extra quarterback in the first round. It never happens, you know? Yes. And like last year it was Will Levis. You know, the year before that it was like Malik Willis. Like, you know, it's just every year there's the extra, and it doesn't happen. And so maybe I'm just becoming old and skeptical, but I don't see it either, unless it is that, you know, that trade back in that you were talking about.
So if that were to happen, I think it would be one of them. I could see, like, so I've mentioned, I think you and I have talked about on NFL Live, the Raiders and Penix Jr. being a good fit. So that's the team I would look to. But again, I don't think it would be pick 13. I think they would go either offensive tackle or, you know, corner or whatever. And then they would jump back in to the end of the first. Are there any other teams that you think might do that for either of those two quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think the Raiders are a good one. That's, I think, the obvious. I would also throw the Giants in there, which they only have Seattle's second round pick because of Leonard Williams. So they're 47. The Rams are at 52. The problem is these teams are like middle of the second round. And so it's much more difficult to imagine, you know, that trade to go all the way back up to, you know, 24, 25, wherever you would need to get. I think it might be more likely that we see them move up in the second round, you know, like call New England at 34 and you know, make the switch there. I think Washington, if you're talking about the team that could make noise in moving back up to get a tackle, they have picks 36 and 40. That's a pretty attractive package. Yeah. But, you know, if you're Vegas at 44 and you're trying to get back to get the fifth year option on the quarterback, that's going to be expensive. I haven't run the numbers on that, but that's probably a future two or maybe even more to climb the board at that point. So it's almost the argument of you would be better off trading back in the first round.
Yeah, from 13.
And doing it that way. Yeah.
So if you were able to trade down, so if you're Vegas at 13 and let's say a team really loves, you're picking ahead of New Orleans. Hey, we talked about Brian Thomas Jr. Maybe it's a team that wants to come
to tackle.
Or for a tackle, you'd be jumping New Orleans, which a lot of folks think we'll take an offensive tackle with the Ryan Ramczyk injury news. So yeah, like let's say, yeah. So, well, again, but like, what if it is the Bills who want to jump Indianapolis for Brian Thomas Jr.? So you'd be going back to 28, something like that.
San Francisco. I like that one. That one makes sense. You know,
that would be
Buffalo.
Cool.
And for Buffalo, you're not giving up as much, you know, to go to the top 10 and you're still getting a premium wide receiver.
I could see, it probably won't happen, but the Niners at 31 are a team where if they really liked one of the offensive tackles, maybe there'd be a willingness to jump up and climb, leapfrog New Orleans and Seattle and Cincinnati, all potential offensive line destinations. Maybe they like Troy Fautanu, you know, for example. So they jump New Orleans, Vegas moves back to the end of the first round, thinking that they can get one of the quarterbacks there. Yeah, I feel like four will go in the first round, but maybe five, maybe, I don't know.
I keep seeing people I really respect say six quarterbacks could go.
No,
and I feel,
it won't be six. It will not be six.
Six is crazy. I also feel like there should be some buyer beware after we look at the 2021 draft class that is now everyone but Trevor Lawrence has been traded 3 years later. I would think, and I like Michael Penix. I like Bo Nix. I think they have some limitations where I wouldn't feel comfortable using a first round pick on them. But I've had it explained to me numerous times. There's no such thing as a second round quarterback that you hit on outside of Jalen Hurts. You know, it's very, very rare to hit on a second round quarterback in this day and age. It's like you're good enough to go in the first or you're a surprise, you know, day three Brock Purdy type player.
Yeah. Where have you heard Bo Nix links with any teams? Because we talked about Penix and the Raiders.
Just Denver? The Rams. Yeah, like the Rams in the second round. There's a connection with Les Snead and his dad and Bo Nix's dad to some degree. I don't know that he fits. Like I always think about Sean McVay looking at Jared Goff's arm strength and being like, nope, that's not doing it for me. Mm-hmm. And all the things I like about Bo Nix, his arm strength is not one of them. And so I have a hard time connecting Sean McVay with that. I would think, how do you go from Matthew Stafford's arm to Bo Nix's arm? But, you know, they took Stetson Bennett, who does not have great arm strength either. So maybe that's, you know, one of those cases of we're overthinking their type a little bit. But no, it's hard to find a fit outside of Denver, even, you know, but they don't have a second round pick. And that's the other hard one.
Yeah, he would need to drop. Gosh. That is
a lot.
Okay.
Like you need to drop a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man. I am so excited to see how all this shakes out. I think it's going to be absolute chaos. And I'm excited to talk to you about it over the coming few days. We're both going to be in Detroit. We are both going to be joining our friend Field Yates for his live draft pod on Wednesday night. But we will also be on set on Thursday and Friday. Matt Miller, where can folks check out your work this week?
ESPN.com. It's probably the easiest place. I'm probably like you. I don't even know my actual schedule for the week. I'm going to show up and go where I'm told. So I'll do my best to tweet out where people can find me. But I will be with you Wednesday night for the live podcast.
Okay. So I don't do mock drafts. And my mock drafts are what I would do, whatever. You know, I'm not in the prediction business. But let me go on record with a top 10 prediction here, just so I have it. And if it actually ends up turning out this way, I will look really smart.
Okay.
Caleb Williams, 1, Bears. Washington Commanders, Jane Daniels. New England sticks, takes Drake May. Marvin Harrison Jr. sticks, or pardon me, Arizona Cardinals stick and take Marvin Harrison Jr. Pretty chalky. Mm-hmm. 5. Minnesota Vikings leapfrog the New York Giants to take J.J. McCarthy. Chargers trade down. 6, Giants take Malik Nabers. 7, the Titans take Joe Alt. 8, the Atlanta Falcons stick and take Dallas Turner. I know we were talking about a trade down. I'm just saying, I think they're going to stick and take Dallas Turner. 9, the Bears, ecstatic. Roma Dunsay. Perfect. And then the Jets go Brock Bowers at pick 10.
Okay, I swear on this. I pulled up the mock draft I'm working on for Wednesday, and it was the exact same. So now I have to change
my
mock draft.
Let's go. No,
either we're going to be wrong together. If you're wrong, we're going to be wrong together.
Okay. I'm saving this to only post if we're correct.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah.
All right, Matt. Thank you so much for coming on today's show. Thank you, as always, to our terrific producers at Omaha, Kirsten Sobecki, Anthony Jimenez, Owen Saylor, Jack Foster. You can check this out on youtube.com/@MinaKimes. It also airs on ESPN2 on Thursday afternoons. And if you want to listen ad-free, check out the podcast on Amazon Music. Otherwise, I will be back on Monday, right away, recapping NFL Draft.
Seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.